Final speaker, and again, very welcome from Derry, is Ian Hunter, as I say, originally from Derry, but has vast experience outside Northern Ireland of the development of the arts. And I think he's very well placed for what one might say is it places him in the category of having an insight into the role of the arts in social, cultural and environmental change. So you're very welcome, Ian.
Thank you very much. If you don't mind, I'll sit down as well.
Sure.
Thanks. First, I'd like to thank Gillian for the furniture. Where is she?
She's had to go to the next venue.
She was. The other story,
never
she went
stops,
she went out and hunted up all this furniture around in the skilling and second hand shops and the work. The creativity of working people, I love it. You know. Anyway, yes, I'm Ian Hunter. I run I'm based out in England near Manchester, and I run my own arts charity. I'm trained as an artist in Belfast in the 60s. And I suppose, like many people, at the end of the 60s, after Burntollet and all of that, it seemed like a good time to leave. And so I spent 10 years in New Zealand, which I was lucky to get to, and ended up as director of the New Zealand National Gallery. That in itself was kind of interesting, but what was much more interesting was my insight into intercultural relations, having come from Northern Ireland at a critical point, to discover that the Maori and Pacific Island people in New Zealand, of course, were relegated into a second-class position. Their culture and art were not represented in the National Gallery, and the prison population was 60% Maori and Pacific Islander. It suddenly occurred to me I'd been through something like that, very similar before, and there was a real sense of tension underneath that. I wasn't able to necessarily deal with that directly, but I certainly was able to appoint the first Maori curator at the New Zealand National Gallery. I left New Zealand at the beginning of the 80s, came back to England, and was lucky enough to be able to do a practice-based, an art-based PhD in Manchester. And, of course, this was at the height of Margaret Thatcher's reign, where many of the cities in England, particularly in the north, Birmingham, Liverpool was a ghost town. You walk out of the main drive in Liverpool in 83, 84, and the shops were all boarded up. And I was able, my work came out of looking at the role of art, not just really in economic regeneration, but in social and environmental regeneration. And out of that, I set up my own charity, the Liberal Arts Trust. Our three main areas of work are looking at agricultural change. I'm a farm boy. I originally grew up in a farm in County Tyrone, Sion Mills. So agriculture and farming culture is very important to me. I'm also a committed trade unionist. Was very much, and I was lucky enough to, when I went to art school, to have my, not only was it free, but you got a small grant. I was a committed socialist, whatever the vagaries of new labour, old labour. I still think that state subsidy for the arts is critical, particularly for education. We need to fight for that, we need to get it back. And of course it's happening again in England. The third area of work we're doing is looking at a cultural strategy for the trade unions. And I think you probably noticed a slight drift in my conversation here, away from art practice or art as an indicator, a facilitator of cultural change, to cultural policy, to actually looking at policy. And I did promise Adam I wouldn't speak about money. I said I'd speak about cultural policy. And it did come up a lot in the early sessions this afternoon, where some of my colleagues here from NACRA and also from the Northern Ireland Group for the Homeless, we're talking about intervening in policy. And I think that's really interesting. Who controls policy, I think, is one of the big issues for people in the cultural sector. The politicians are relatively easy to get to. You do get a kind of a general response from them, but who controls the policy, that's really interesting. So I want to come back to that in the final short period of my 10 minutes. But I just want to begin by saying the capacity of art to transform the ordinary into the universal. And they mentioned, you mentioned dear Seamus Heaney. When Seamus died, of course, it was a great sad loss to Ireland, sad loss to poetry, and sad loss to world culture. I wanted to go to his funeral, but I heard that Bono was there, so I thought, well, leave it to Bono. I know that's a bit unfair. There was a great reverence, and I think that was legitimate. So with my partner, Celia, and I, we went over in February this year to Seamus's grave in his little village in South Derry. And we drove up to the We had trouble finding it, first of all, because my geography of South Derry is not that good. Limavady and Derry I can cope with. But eventually we found a little parish church and huge car park. It was a rainy day, nobody there, and there was absolutely no signs whatsoever. And there was another parish church, but it wasn't that. We drove back to the... Anyway, we got into the car park, and there was absolutely no signs whatsoever. And I had expected this, heritage sign, Seamus Heaney's grave, wasn't there. And eventually, way over in the far, far corner of the car park, it was a huge, huge car park, was this funny little, one of those boards you use for parking, and it said, no parking. But taped under it in manky sellotape was Seamus Heaney. And I thought that was really interesting. A little tiny arrow round the back, went round the back, and another little parking sign, no parking, and Seamus Heaney and ballpoint. And eventually we find the grave, and those of you who've been there, very ordinary, this little soil grave tucked away in the corner. We, of course, must venerate our artists, but we shouldn't forget their ordinary beginnings and where they came from. Seamus felt more at home, or must feel more at home there than he's ever felt anywhere. What an extraordinary person! Great world tributes, the Nobel Prize, and so on. But what a sense of humanity! What a sense of dignity in that man, and for the ordinary. And just, I'm not going to quote his poems because I'm not a poet. But because I come from a farming background, a rural background in Ireland, and I grew up in my grandmother's cottage in Sion Mills, a little thatched cottage in the 50s, and there's just two images, because I'm a visual artist, and it's this notion of the transformation of the ordinary into the universal, something quite powerful in art. What I mean by ordinary experiences, I mean lived experiences. And one of the poems was about his farmhouse, his home, and it's nighttime, and they're sitting at the table, the lamplight, and so on. And he's describing it in the poem, and out of the corner of his eye, metaphorically speaking, there's the pail of drinking water by the porch. And he looks at it, and he describes, as the train from Mafrafelt to Derry thunders past, 5 miles or a couple of miles away, the rings of the shockwaves of the train spreading on the surface of the water. How poetic, how magic. The other one is, if you've ever gathered potatoes, and I spelled my early life gathering potatoes for my uncle. It was slave labor. It was too bald for a week. It was outrageous. Talk about child exploitation. And one of the things that happened at the thing you always look forward to at the end of the day, gathering potatoes, because you were absolutely whacked and bushed, was when the tractor left the field. And the potatoes were all covered up, and the workers were all there with their baskets and so on. And a strange thing would happen. As the tractor would leave the field, any of you involved in farming, when the tractor's in the field, it's sort of digging in the earth, and its energy goes into the earth. As soon as it leaves the field onto the tarmac road, it revs, makes a huge revving sound, and a beautiful poem by Heaney where he describes the tractor revving as it goes into the road. Ordinary experiences, but they're actually quite extraordinary. What I really want to tell you about is a project I was asked to do in Northern Ireland in 1999-2000. I knew Ivan Armstrong, who was the community arts officer with the Arts Council in Belfast, a very remarkable person, a great educator, and a great love of communities. And he asked me if I would come over and do some work on, arts and peace and reconciliation. I said, for God's sake, Ivan, the place, you've got the best people in Ireland working on this. You don't need me coming over from Ireland, and it's not an area of any expertise. To be honest, I was reluctant to come over because I felt I knew England, I could operate in that environment. I'd been away from Ireland for a long time. Anyway, Ivan persuaded me, and I did a residency at St. Collins Park House. Some of you may know it in Derry. When Barney Devine was there, I think Barney did some work up here. Kind of long story short, Barney said, well, look, I'd like you to do some art projects that would help me in my peace and reconciliation work at St. Collins Park House. So I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come over for 2 weeks. I said, all I want to do is sit in all the meetings you have. So I would try and get a sense of how St. Collins Park House worked. One of the meetings was very interesting. It was a meeting of all the employers in Derry, Desmond's, Marks & Spencer's, and so on. And the purpose of the meeting was to look at how to combat sectarianism in the workplace. It's a fascinating meeting, and I learned a lot. And the meeting went on for about an hour, and they had the trade union representative there from Counteract, which was the trade TU or the ICTU anti-sectarian unit, and he made a very interesting presentation. At the end of it, there were all the managers from all the companies in Derry, all talking about how do you improve sectarianism in the workplace. Very worthy, very, very important, but nobody from the shop floor was there, nobody from the workplace. So I told Barney afterwards, I said, Barney, I'd like to set up a project to look at working with shop floor experience, the experience of shop stewards or people in the workplace, how they might deal with sectarianism, what their experiences were. Sounds a bit naive because all the work's been done in that area. Cut a long story short, I opted to work with the bus drivers. I talked to the Ulster Bus and City Bus in Belfast, and I said, look, the bus drivers go everywhere, they see everything, they hear everything, and they say nothing. So the Unity Unite set me up a meeting with Leo Flanagan, a retired bus driver in Derry. And I had a meeting with Leo and some of all the retired bus drivers, and I explained the project. I said, well, look, would it help if we got some arts funding, lottery funding, and got some artists to work with the bus drivers to see how you deal with these issues of, sectarianism? And he said, yeah, he said, but there's another story. And I said, what's that? He said, and he was actually crying. He said, our story has never been told. The contribution that the transport workers made to the cause of peace and reconciliation in Northern Ireland, quite extraordinary. Yes, other unions did it, other workplaces did it, but the transport union was particularly interesting because, as you may know, the paramilitaries, all of them, had targeted the transport, part of the paramilitary, forgive me, it sounds like I'm telling you something you don't know, was to knock out civil society. Was to knock out the infrastructure of civil society to destabilize, and the transport system became a particular target. You know that anyway. The symbol of the burning bus was a ubiquitous symbol for Northern Ireland through the 70s and the 80s. The guts of the project was to take a bunch of young artists, photographers, filmmakers, writers, let them work with the bus drivers and the shop stewards, and they did this for 2 years, and out of it came a series of films. A play, Jimmy Ellis starred in the bus drivers, telling the bus driver's story. But the essence of it was that capacity of ordinary to the ordinary experiences of people. It was the courage of the bus workers to stand united as Protestants and Catholics and from what other persuasion against the full force of the paramilitaries. 13 bus drivers lost their lives. Over almost 1,000 were injured. And it was quite an extraordinary story. The two key elements of the story were relevant to this conference is how we use funding in the arts, particularly lottery money. And that project came out of a conversation with the PUC in London because the lottery money, there was a government inquiry about how lottery money was being diverted into prestige, middle-class, museums and galleries and so on. How could we unlock some of that money and get it back into the workplace? So that was part of the methodology. The other one was to get young artists, particularly young recent graduates, to understand the role of trade unions in promoting democracy in the context of a destabilized civil community. Thank you.